නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Dear Dhamma friends, actually we were discussing Bahudhatuka Sutta, which is available in Majjhima Nikaya and which explains about many kinds of elements and certain aspects of the sense basis and then Patisamuppada and certain things, how they are possible and what are impossible. So actually the whole discussion happened because of a point made by the Buddha, and he particularly mentioned Yani kani ca bhikkhave bhayani uppajjanti sabbani tani balato uppajjanti no panditato. If there are any man-made fears happen in this world, all those will happen because of a fool, a bad person, but not because of a wise person. Similarly, if there are any kind of a trouble arises, that too will happen because of a bad person, a fool, but not because of a wise person. If there is any calamity happen, that too would happen because of a bad person, a fool, but not because of a wise person. So the ultimately Buddha points out or advised the monks, Pandita bhavissama vimansakati evam hivo bhikkave sikkitabbanti. So monks, you should determine to become wise and to be inquirers. So that's a kind of an advice, because if we are foolish, if we are unmindful, not inquiring, then we too can cause fears, troubles and the calamities. So instead Buddha is asking his followers to be wise and then the inquirers. So then at that occasion, Venerable Ananda asked from the Buddha, so Bhante, how one can become wise and inquiring? At that moment, actually, when Buddha explained four factors how one can become wise and inquirer. Dhatu kusalo cha hoti, ayatana kusalo cha hoti, paticca samuppada kusalo cha hoti, thana thana kusalo cha hoti. Skilled in the elements, skilled in the basis, skilled in dependent origination, and then skilled in what is possible and what is impossible. So these are the things now we are discussing, and Venerable Ananda, one after the other, asked a series of questions. So he first asked how one can become skilled in the elements. And then Buddha gives various different explanations about how one can become skilled in elements. So one explanation is about the 18 kinds of elements, another explanation about 6 types of elements, again another explanation again about 6 kinds of elements. So likewise, different explanations were given about the elements, and we actually have discussed all of them. And then after discussing all that, Venerable Ananda asked about the basis. Kittavatapada bhante ayatana kusalo bhikkhuti alang vachanayati. Venerable sir, what is the way a bhikkhu can become skilled in basis? And then Buddha explains about the internal sense basis and the external sense basis. Chakkuncheva rupacha, sotancha saddacha, ghanancha gandhacha, jivhacha rasacha, kayocha pottabbacha, manocha dhammacha. So, eye and forms, ear and sounds, nose and odors, tongue and flavors, body and tangibles, mind and mind objects. So this is how he basically say one have to know the sense basis. So now we can understand, actually we typically call ourselves as a man, a woman, and we give a name. So likewise, we, according to our conventions, so many identities are there, and we recognize with them, we identify with them, and ultimately we become that. But now here Buddha gives a different explanation. The so-called man or woman is nothing but different kinds of elements, and now it's nothing but different sense bases. Now the yogi, the follower, would look from a different angle. Rather than he simply identify himself as a particular person, an important person, now he tends to look at oneself from a different angle. Very much like through the eyes he can see, through the ears can listen, through the nose you can recognize various odors, through the tongue you can recognize various tastes, through the body you can recognize various tangibles, and through the mind you can know different mind objects. Anyway, is there a person who is going through it? Is there a person who is experiencing it? So those are the interesting questions that the sutta may slowly answer. As one is practicing all this, that so-called self will become very much like invalidate, and one would understand there is no self. So that's the kind of thorough understanding that one would gain through the, say, even the elements related practice or the sense bases related practice. Now, how a process happens without the participation of an agent? So that is where we get a interesting answer through the dependent origination. So after Buddha explains about the sense bases, Venerable Ananda inquire about Kittavatapana Bhante Paticca Samuppada Kusalo Bhikkhuti Alang Vachanayati. So how one can say that he is skilled in the Paticca Samuppada, dependent origination. And here the important theory part or the principle is imasming sati idang hoti imasuppada idang uppajjati imasming asati idang nahoti imasa nirodha idang nirujjati. When this exists, that comes to be. With the arising of this, that arises. When this does not exist, that does not come to be. With the cessation of this, that ceases. So basically there is a relationship between all the conditioned phenomena, and we can't say that a particular conditioned phenomena is completely independent. Every conditioned phenomena is so dependent. It depends on something else. When something exists, this also can exist, and with the arising of this, this also arises. But if this does not exist, it can't also, the other thing also can't exist. With the passing away of this, the dependent part also passes away. So likewise, this kind of a universal principle is something that Buddha realized, thoroughly understand, and he tries to simplify it and explain to us so that we too can understand it. And he went on to explain avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam. So likewise, this typical parisamuppada formula, or we can say the dependently arising components, and he explained, and probably we can understand that. Now these things actually we already discussed, and then particularly in this Parisamuppada we understood, okay, we should know how this principle works practically, and for that certain entry points are there, like say for example Passapaccaya Vedana, how particular contact causes the feelings. So through one's meditation practice, one would be able to recognize such things, how the contact causes feelings. So the feelings are completely dependent on the type of the contact. If a certain contact is fairly rough, accordingly there is a type of feeling would arise. If the contact is fairly refined, very soft, accordingly a particular type of feeling arise. So the nature of the feeling is completely dependent on the nature of the contact. So till the contact continues, the feeling also continue, but once the contact discontinue, the feeling also discontinue. So the feeling is completely dependent on the contact. So likewise, we can slowly investigate how the principle works in ourselves, and later probably once we are familiar with the mind, we can recognize how the feelings would cause certain desires in the mind. Whenever a desire happens, there may be an underneath feeling. So we may attach to a particular feeling, we like a particular feeling, or we hate a particular feeling. All that causes different kinds of desires in the mind. So for the desire to happen, feelings has to exist. So these things also we discussed, and then in the Patisamuppada teaching, we further understood that the interrelationship between the consciousness and the name and form, vijnana and namarupa, is the most important link, because that link is very, very important. So not knowing that interdependency, so consciousness causes name and form, name and form causes consciousness. There's a kind of a very beautiful interrelationship between the vijnana and namarupa, and it's subtle to understand, difficult to understand. Not knowing that, we have certain ignorance and we attempt to produce various formations. We act and we become completely tangled, and ultimately it gives up, it's produced certain kind of a momentum, and we can't keep it only to the mental side. Then we start functioning using the other sense bases. Namarupaccha salayatana, the name and form causes the six sense bases to operate. It gives a certain kind of a momentum, kind of a trigger for the six sense bases to operate. And then it further produces certain contacts, then the feelings, then further desires, craving, and ultimately the clinging happen. Now we are born to a new state of mind. So likewise, the Parisamupada would work within ourselves in this very life, every moment when we are unmindful. Now, when we discuss this thing, actually few people asked about the rebirth process. So I thought of touching that part to some extent. So we were discussing Parisamupada particularly related to this life, and how certain events completely we go through completely unmindfully, very much like we are born to a new state. We are not in this world, like we are completely distracted, completely at a different realm, different world like, and we typically call it as kind of a bhava, a type of an existence. But while in this life, you can get into different existence. Say for example, while you are in a say walking path, you hear a beautiful music, and slowly, slowly you pay attention to that, and certain thoughts starts triggering out, and then certain images also pops up in the mind, and now mind slowly start adhering to that song, and you start maybe enjoying that song. Ultimately, probably you might even stop your walking and close your eyes and completely enjoy that song. So it can happen. So now we are very much like trapped in that song, in that sound. Now the six sense bases start operating, and we are clinging, we are craving, and ultimately we are grasping. So now we are born to a new world. So whatever the content representing in that particular song becomes our imaginary incident. In that little incident, now we are born. So likewise, throughout our life, various incidents we can recognize or observe how we are again and again born onto such mind-made incidents, which might not happen yet or which already have happened, and we again and again relive in them. Or before something happens, we start pre-living with them. So fairly the mind's involvement is significant, and we become fairly unmindful and completely trapped, completely driven by those incidents. So there we can recognize the operation of the ignorance and how the sankharas are contributing and how different formations, preparations happen in the mind, so that the consciousness and name and form become fairly tightened, and that whirlpool become pretty powerful, and we being driven by that ultimately to the amount that we grasp we are born to a new state. So this is very much, I feel, clear to a yogi who is practicing vipassana, and as slowly he is observing his own mind, he can understand that time to time he may get shifted to this kind of temporary mind states, probably even imaginary states, dreamlike things. But as we continue our practice, so this tangle has to untangle. This whole process has to be slowly evident, so that different links start breaking and different links start fading away. Ultimately, the name and form and the consciousness also, that link, that interdependence, also has to be weakened. And you should be able to recognize a kind of a consciousness where there is no entanglement with the name and form. And such consciousness is then we call unestablished. It does not establish at any place. It is not entangled with any name and form. It's a kind of a free consciousness, a freed consciousness, unestablished consciousness, unmanifested consciousness. Now, so how then the rebirth happen? So we can recognize certain suttas talking about the rebirth, which connects with the Parisamuppada. Let me take few examples. In Anguttara Nikaya there is one sutta called Patama Bhava Sutta. So there Venerable Ananda asks the direct question. Atako ayasma anando yena bhagavate nupasankami upasankamitva bhagavantang abhivadetva ekamantan nisidhi ekamantan nisinnoko ayasma anando bhagavantang etadavocha bhavo bhavoti bhante ucchati kittavatanuko bhante bhavo hoti. So while Buddha was there, so Venerable Ananda approached him and he paid his homage, sat down onto one side, and he is asking the question, Bhante, it is said the existence, bhava. In what way, Bhante, is there existence? Now then Buddha give a fairly comprehensive answer. Kama dhatu epakkancha ananda, kama kamang na bhavissa, apinuko kama bhavo panyaye thati. If Ananda, there were no kamma ripening in the sensory realm, would sense sphere existence be discerned? Now basically that indicates that the kama bhava to exist, there should be certain kamma to ripen there. So the Buddha's answer, Buddha's question to Venerable Ananda gives a kind of a different side of this question. So the kama bhava should exist only when beings are there to result in some sort of a such karmic potential. Say a certain being would have done certain activity which only can ripen, give fruits in existence in a sensual realm, so then he will be reborn in the sensual realm. So therefore this karma is one of the very important factor for this existence to happen. So when there is certain potential karma available, then only he may continue his existence in a particular realm. Now we are talking about the sensual realm, kama bhava. And when the question is asked from Venerable Ananda, that is, if there is no kama, which is which is destined to ripen in the sensual realm, then where there be a sensual realm? And then he says, no Bhante. Ithiko ananda kamman kettan vinyanam bijan tanha sineho. Avijja nivaranaanam sattanam tanha sanyojanaanam hinaya dhatuya vinyanam patitthitam. Evang ayatim punabhavabi nibbatti hoti. Now Buddha summarized telling, thus ananda, for beings hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving, kamma is the field, consciousness the seed, and the craving the moisture for their consciousness to be established in an inferior realm. Inferior realm is the sensual realm, where we are. In this way, there is the production of renewed existence in the future. Now the idea here is that there are particularly three factors contributing for this continuous existence. One thing is, assume that we are being born to this sensual realm, this inferior realm, that indicates that we had certain karmic potential, those will ripen in the sensual realm. So that's why we took in this, we were very much born into this realm, because we had the karmic potential to ripe in this realm, in this kind of a realm. Kamman kettang. And then the vinyanam bijang, the consciousness is the seed. And tanha sineho, craving is the moisture. So these three factors are essential for a rebirth to happen. So one has accumulated certain amount of a karmic potential, which is going to ripen only in the sensual realm. So now you have a potential to be born in the sensual realm. And there is a consciousness arising, passing away, arising, passing away. And now assume it is passed away from a previous existence. And now it is have the potential to be reborn in a new existence. And then once it happens, the craving supplies the moisture. So this kind of a model, we now have to think how a new rebirth happened in a sensual realm. Now similarly, Buddha explains about the fine material realm. You know that Rupavachara Brahma realms. Now this, what we have already discussed, is applicable to the human realm and the Apaya, the kind of lower realms, and then the Deva realms. All are considered as the sensual realms. So all that indicates there's a certain karmic potential. Say for example, while someone is in the human realm, he generates certain karma. Say he kills animals, doing the stealing and sexual misconduct, all that, say some very unwholesome potential being produced. He do various unwholesome activities. Now what happened, he is producing certain unwholesome potential, karmic potential, which should produce kind of a result in a sensual realm, say a lower realm. Now the karmic potential is available now. Such a realm, such a field is available now because of his past activities. Now suppose he is going to die. So at that moment, so the karmic potential produce that related, say, realm for him, and then the vinyana get birth there as the seed, and we keep pouring the craving to that existence. So the craving is necessary, otherwise the seed alone can't very much grow in this particular realm. The craving also is a necessary factor. So there are three main factors talking here in this sutta. Consciousness operates as the seed, there is a karmic potential, and then the craving is supplied, that is very much like the water, the moisture, to grow this seed. This is a kind of a picture that Buddha gives in this Pathama Bhava Sutta. So there again he explained how the, in a similar pattern, how the rebirth happens in a fine material realm. So those are the Rupavachara Brahma realms. And assume that someone is practicing Jhana and he is producing a kind of a karmic potential to produce in such a related corresponding type of a realm. So that jhanic potential, the karmic potential is now available. And once he is passing away from here, the consciousness reborn in such a realm, and there is certain kind of a grasping, that craving part. That craving part help him to continue such rebirth, those activities, those livelihood, and now the continuation happens in that realm. There are also the three factors are important. The karmic potential is there, then the consciousness is there, and then the craving is there. Similarly, he explains about the arupa, that is the immaterial realm. So suppose that someone is developing the arupa jhana, formless jhana, and then such a karmic potential being developed, and that can only be ripened or give fruits in such kind of a realm, arupa realm, formless realm. And after the death, so he will be reborn in a formless realm. The consciousness seed is further strengthened, fertilized by this, nurtured by this water, that is the craving. So Buddha explained all these three realms here, but totally dependent on the karma. So if they are assumed that if there are no beings who are going to have certain kind of karma to produce in a certain realm, so then there is no point of talking about such realm, because there are no beings to enjoy or to suffer because of certain that karma. So the karma is very much like the field. Now, so what happened to an arahant? So that is also explained in the certain suttas, in Sutta Nipata Muni Sutta, for example. So that's an interesting verse there. Sankhaya vattuni pamaya bijam. Sineha massa nanuppavecce. Save muni jati khayanta dasi takkam pahaya na upeti sankham. So this is also a very profound verse. Sankham sankhaya vattuni pamaya bijam. So he has comprehended the ground. So the ground is the kam actually. Sankhaya vattuni. So the ground we already discussed, the field, the kamma. So this particular person, the arahant, has understood, okay, kamma operates as the field for me. So that is the ground. Pamaya bijang. And he has crushed the seed. The consciousness now he has crushed. Because that is the seed. So he has destroyed the seed, which has the potential to be reborn. That consciousness, such vijnana, he somehow was able to crush it. So we'll discuss how, to some extent we already discussed how we are doing it, and certain other suttas we'll take to further explain it. So he was able to crush the consciousness, a such tangled consciousness or the conditioned consciousness. So he was able to crush the consciousness, the seed basically. Having crushed the seed, pamaya bijam, sineha massa nanuppavenje, and he would not nurture it with moisture. Now you can see the three factors are basically attacked by the arahant. One thing is he comprehended the ground, that is the karma. So he should have found a way to avoid any building up of new karma, new potential. That is one thing. And he should found a way to avoid the establishment of the consciousness only if it is established, only he will get the kind of a living seed. But if he is able to avoid such a growing part, living part, then that seed will completely disappear at the end of this life. And the other thing is, he has completely removed the moisture. He does not promote such moisture that indicates that he has no craving. Save muni jati khayanta dasi. So such a muni, a sage, he sees the final or the end of the birth. Jati khayanta dasi. He is able to see the end of the birth. And takkam pahaya na upeti sankhang. Having abandoned thought, and he cannot be designated. Now, typically now, say for example about the Buddha, so he understood about the full operation about the karma, and his consciousness, the vijnana, is no more a kind of a conditioned consciousness, ignorant type of a consciousness. He was able to completely make it unestablished, unmanifested. That part is also done. And he has abandoned all the craving. What happens then? And he is the one seeing the jatikkhaya. So the complete ending, the destruction of the birth. And not by merely thinking, by the way. Not by merely rationalizing or reasoning. But he has gone beyond that takka. Gone beyond that reasoning or logical reasoning. Now, upeti sankang. So, when he realizes such a state, he is not designated by these typical conventional terms. Now, we might say, okay, there is the Buddha sitting or there is the Buddha preaching. So, likewise, we can showing his body. But there is a body, but he is not clinging to that body. And there are various other activities, but he is not claiming those activities belong to him as a person, as an individual. So that's the difference actually. So we also have bodies, but we identify with the body. Oh, this is my body, this is I am. I am beautiful, I am ugly, I am tall, I am short. So related to the body, we have a very strong identification. But Buddha has completely given it up. Even though the body continues to live, he does not identify with it. So he has gone beyond the typical conventional reckoning, designations. It's a very profound way how the Buddha points it out. And certain other suttas further give a kind of explanation how the consciousness would find roots or find a fertile ground to grow. I'll take two suttas like Chetana Sutta. Yancha bhikkave cheteti, yancha pakappeti, yancha anuseti, arammana metam hoti vinyanasya titiya. Arammane sati patittha vinyanasya hoti. So Buddha mentioned when someone intentionally think, yancha pakappeti, when someone plans, and yancha anuseti, and when there is a tendency, kind of a latent tendency available in the mind. Arammana metam hoti vijnanasya titiya. Then that kind of a potential become the basis for the consciousness to establish, to maintain the consciousness. And arammane sati patittha vijnanasya hoti. When that such kind of a basis is available, it is enough for the consciousness to establish. Now the idea is, now say for example, you keep on thinking about someone. Say you have a loved one, maybe your son, your daughter, your husband, wife, fiancé, fiancée, whatever. Now you keep on thinking about him, thinking about her. Many, many thoughts are there, many, many imaginations are there, proliferations are there. So that is more than enough for the consciousness to establish. So that is one thing. So assume that on such situation, if you are going to die, definitely you will be reborn. And then, now suppose, assume that you are not obsessed like that, but certain kind of a planning going on in the mind, And even without your participation, certain kind of thoughts are there, very much like background thoughts. Typically, we call them as pakampa, pakampeti, pakappeti. Very much like unintentional thinking. So you are not purposely thinking, but mind continues thinking. There is no rest to the mind. There is no any absence of thoughts, but there is thinking going on without your intentional participation. Such kind of thoughts are there. That would be even enough for the consciousness to establish. When such ongoing thinking is available, if someone dies, then again he would reborn, because that is enough for the consciousness to establish. Now suppose you are not purposely intentionally thinking. The first category, we assume that we were able to avoid. And suppose that you are able to completely silence the mind. There are no thoughts at all. Not even involuntary, unintentional kind of thoughts are also not there. Fairly a kind of a silence. Now what happened? Now if in case you have certain latent tendency, what we call as the anusaya, that is also enough for the rebirth to happen, the consciousness to establish. And when the consciousness establish, tasmin patittite vinyane virulhe ayatim punabhavabi nibbatti hoti. When such consciousness being sort of established and the moisture is there, the supply of craving is there, and then it further grows and the punabhava, the rebirth would happen. Ayatim punabhavabi nibbattiya sati ayatim jati jara marana soka parideva dukkha domana supayasa sambhavanti. So the typical patisamuppada will continue because the craving is there, the clinging is there, the birth existence is there. So that is one explanation available in the Chetana Sutta. And then Duchiya Techana Sutta give a further analysis. Yancha bhikkhave cheteti yancha pakappeti yancha anuseti arambana metang hoti vinyanasa titiya. That is very similar to the previous sutta. Arambane sati patittha vinyanasa hoti. When such arambana, the object is there, the consciousness can establish. Tasmin patittite vinyane virulhe nama rupassa vakkanti hoti. Now we get the other component for the consciousness. So it is, therefore it is not this consciousness alone. So this kind of a consciousness always tangled with the name and form. So that's why typically whenever we are unmindful and ignorant, there are continuous formations happen, preparations happens, constructions happens in the mind. So the consciousness and name and form are very much like prepare a kind of a tangle. So they both exist. You can't say a tangled consciousness do not have a name and form. It is a must to have a name and form. Mind has certain kind of an object. So nama rupasa vakkanti hoti tasmin patittite vinyani. Now when that consciousness is there, the name and form fairly supports. Nama rupaccha salayatanam salayatana paccha passa passa paccha vedana vedana paccha tanha tanha paccha upadana upadana paccha bahu bahu paccha jati. So now the dependent origination continues. Rebirth has taken place. Name and form get the tangle with the consciousness. Name and form further produce the sense bases to the contact to the feelings to craving to grasping, all that is continuing. Now these suttas actually explain to some extent how the rebirth happens and how the Patisamuppada continues. Now this is very much from the early Buddhist teachings, particularly using the sutta discussions, sutta pitaka. And so if you have any questions, we can discuss. So I like to conclude here about the Patisamuppada Kusala. So actually in the original sutta, what we were discussing, Bahudhatuka Sutta does not explain much about the rebirth and all that. But since some had certain questions, how using the dependent origination one would explain the rebirth, particularly using the early Buddhist teachings. That's what I want to add these few other suttas. And with that, I like to conclude the dependent origination part. And now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Now, if anybody have any questions, please raise their hand and then we can unmute and have those questions as well. But there is one question from Ashtini Blair.
Yeah.
Are there any questions from your side?
Not yet. No question. Hola. So already born.
Ashtini. Yeah. Ashtini, you can ask your question.
Yes.
Swami Dhan, sir, you know, the Nibya is the head. I want you to give me an idea so that I can determine to be happy and establish a happy life starting from the 1st of January according to Dhamma. Please give me some advice for that.
Ah, good. So one thing I feel is the development of the mindfulness. So otherwise, as we already discussed, so the unmindful mind takes us to various imaginations and various fears, a kind of a shifted worldly kind of an experience where we lost the reality. So the development of the mindfulness has to be, therefore, a kind of a determination. Saying during this upcoming year, I am trying to develop mindfulness. I am trying to be mindful as much as possible. So during all the daily activities, I am trying to be mindful. So at least I am not completely driven by the thoughts, driven by the incidents, but I am trying to establish mindfulness in the present moment. So that may be one determination. Then the other thing is, if the mind feels restless, scattered, okay, I have to have some kind of a calmness in the mind, peace in the mind. So I'm trying again and again to make the mind peaceful, calm, relax. So that may be another determination. On the other hand, if the mind is completely ignorant, so I'm continuously suffering because of this ignorance, making a lot of unnecessary formations, making a lot of unnecessary imaginations, going to proliferations, obsessions. So such unmindful, unwise kind of a mind is really a hazard. So that I am trying to develop certain wisdom so that the proliferation become less and less, obsessions become less and less. At least time to time mind experience certain peace, calmness, relaxation. So therefore I am going to develop some wisdom. So I feel these three determinations would be enough for anyone to have for the upcoming year.
Swami Nihasa, could you please explain to me how can we develop wisdom in our life apart from doing meditation?
Yeah, all many things are there now. Say, for example, if you are participating in a discussion, that is also an event where we can develop wisdom. If you are reading a book, that is also a way to develop wisdom. They are listening to a Dhamma sermon, that is also a way to develop wisdom. And say you do some inner reflections. So after you listen to a certain sutta, certain Dhamma, certain facts, say you do some inner contemplation, a kind of a reasoning. So that also gives you some convincing within the mind, okay, this is like this, so how things are interconnected, how things are happening. So you do some inner reflection, reasoning. That also helps to clarify certain doubts and to come to certain fairly proper conclusion. And then the vipassana. that as we already know.
Sorry, so finally I'd like to ask you how to develop anicca sanya in mind sometimes, because I always take everything in a manner of perfection and everything, so that I want to develop some my mind where I have anicca sanya. So I don't know deep dhamma, but in my day-to-day life I can sometimes observe impermanence of things.
Hmm.
That means worldly things,
mm-hmm.
material things.
Hmm.
By understanding that, will it give a start for me to understand anicca sanya? Oh, is it not relevant?
Right.
I just don't know. Could you please explain something?
Yeah, it is fairly relevant. Now, say for example, while we are looking at a tree, suppose there's a fruit falling down. Suppose there's an old leaf falling down. That also indicates the anicca sanya. Now, there's an old leaf falling down. So it has become kind of gray or yellowish, and then it is now falling down, completing his task. So it is also impermanent. It is also indicating some impermanent principle. And say someone dies, that also indicates the impermanent. Say the sun rises from the east and ultimately during the night or in the evening, it sets. And then the sunset happens, and that also indicates the impermanent. So many, many natural phenomena indicates us the impermanence if we are looking at from that angle. Now, even a certain breath, say in-breath happens, but it does not continue, it also finish. Out-breath happens, it also does not continue, but it also finishes. And every phenomena shows their inevitable part, subject to impermanence. Now, that very superficial kind of understanding is also quite helpful, but in order to understand it more profoundly, we develop certain mindfulness and concentration, and then using that we are trying to realize the impermanence in a more profound, fairly precise way. But for one to have some idea or have some eagerness to understand that kind of profound impermanence, so that typical mundane kind of external or a conventional kind of impermanence also will give you a kind of a blessing, an invitation or urgency to understand this principle.
And also, it was starting from India, I like to add that into my life. And thank you very much, Sanyasa.
Yeah.
Sanyasa, much merit for you.
Yeah, thank you, Sanyasa.
So, Bhante, I don't have any other questions from our side.
Right.
But I have some for my own. Can I go ahead with those as well?
Okay.
And so, today's Dhamma discussion, it's very profound and kind of deep as well. The existence itself, we talked about with Venerable Ananda, the conversation between Buddha and Ananda, it's pretty much so deep as well. So
mm-hmm.
He talks about contact and the feelings to be. And it looks like what I heard is they are co-dependent, contact and the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And also what I heard is like the vijnana also needs to come into play in order for us to sort of have the next moment, I guess. Would you explain a bit more details into that?
So basically what you are suggesting is that the vijnana and nama rupa is a must to exist for the contact to happen?
didn't understand about, so there are multiple things that you talked about and which I couldn't sort of get all that points.
Right.
I noted down the contact and the feelings. They are coexistence.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, first of all, is that correct as
well? Yeah, it is correct. So that is one easy entry point for a yogi to understand the Patisamuppada, because you know that the name and form and consciousness, such link is very refined and very difficult to understand for a beginner. But how the contact causes feeling is a fairly easy point that one can try to understand. Say while walking, you know that while the foot is not touching the ground, it is still on the up, you can't feel much. But once it is hitting the ground, then only you will get a gross sensation, a gross kind of a feeling. And assume that you are now walking on a koya mat and your foot touching the ground. So that touch sensation causes a rough sensation, a rough feeling. Assume now you step into the tile floor and your foot is now touching the tile floor. Accordingly, a different kind of a sensation, a feeling would arise. So the produced feeling is completely dependent, completely determined by the previous contact, the type of the contact. And till that contact continues, you will get the corresponding type of a feeling. So this is not a big thing to understand. I mean, this is not very difficult to understand. But the thing is, even though we logically understand it, even when now I am telling it, but you have to practice it, this very simple principle, till you profoundly understand, you have to practice it. You should recognize how the feeling is arising, how the feelings are arising, depending on the contact. So that's why in certain verses like pussa pussa vayam passati evam chassa nirujjati or something like that, in the Dvaitanupassana Sutta, Buddha explains each and every contact, how it produces a corresponding type of a feeling. So then actually there is no person who is doing it, or there is no person who is feeling it, but the contact is the kind of cause which is producing the feeling. So likewise, you get a different angle of looking at things rather than taking things personally or thinking that someone else is doing it, some agent is doing it, some superpower is doing it, God is doing it. So we attribute the feelings to different other external phenomena, but the contact is the root cause. Like,
so of course the consciousness also need to exist, isn't it?
Sure.
Otherwise we will never sort of that cycle will never go on.
Correct. Definitely correct. Yeah. So that is how, I mean, once we enter to the principle, try to realize the principle slowly using this kind of a easy link, then slowly you can go deeper using your own manasikara and try to recognize how the contact happens. Okay, the sense bases are necessary, essential for the contact to happen. How then the sense bases are being triggered? How they are being very much like triggered to operate, then the name and form, the mental contribution, mental triggering, motivation is a must for the sense basis to operate. And this mental triggering, this motivation to happen, so you should have some kind of a cognition, the knowing part. So that knowing part is the consciousness. So the consciousness and mental incidents happening inside, they are interlinked. So knowing and then the incident, knowing and the incident, knowing and the name and form, we can say the other way. Now, so that circulation is a must for us to continuously supply that, say, sense participation. We are continuously looking, continuously listening. Because internally the mind has kind of a desire for that, and whatever the produced mental images, feelings, thoughts are appealing to us, we further like it, we further want it. Now we further listen, we further enjoy.
information in our mind as well, so collectively, and we basically recall that, and that basically associate to our feelings, and whether it is a liking or disliking, and that basically goes into the next birth, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Because whatever we experience in the mind, something we like it, we have a desire to it, and we identify with it, we give a value to it. And the content of that mental images or the thoughts gives us a kind of a desire, a craving to it. So we completely get tangled in it. We can't see at that moment this, they are merely mental images or perceptions or merely thoughts. We can't see like that. Rather, we completely get mad about it, crazy about it. We like it. The content completely overwhelm us.
Very good. Thank you, Bhante. And I see there is another hand has been raised by Geeta Mendis. I think I'll give you the opportunity to ask your question, please.
Bhante, it's a bit difficult for me to explain what I'm trying to ask, but I'll try. This happened a few years ago, but the experience remains very clear in my mind. But I don't know how to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing some walking meditation. I was not well that day. I was in the monastery at Kandubodda. I was just walking up and down, not particularly trying to concentrate. And I was just waiting for the Dhamma session to start in the next hall. So walking up and down, I remember feeling tired and not well. Then suddenly, I started to experience, there were bird sounds. I just hear the sound. There's a sound and there's hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Then again another sound and again hearing from different directions.
Mm-hmm.
And this went on for a little while and I could not, suddenly it was like, there was nobody there.
Mm-hmm.
There was the sound arising and experiencing of it.
Correct.
And with that, first I felt very sad, as if I had lived with a delusion all my life,
mm-hmm.
that there was someone there. Then there was a peace that came, profound peace. And I just fell into this silence, and I eventually, when the bell rang, I walked to the Q&A session, but I was still in that still space of peace, and seeing everything all a bit sort of disconnected or something like that.
Correct.
So, how to understand that experience?
So that's why the Patisamuppada basically has stopped at that moment. So there is no grasping, there is no craving. So the sound happened and it disappeared. But you didn't grasp it, so that no further thinking about it, no imagining about it, no any kind of a dream about it. So the mind has completely given it up, totally. And then the mind has stopped. You feel like stuck. There is no any continuation. You feel like stuck. The mind does not continue like. There is nothing for you to grasp, to continue, to establish. And it's a nice experience. Just try to... This is what actually we call as the anisita or anupadana. So the mind does not associate anything, or mind does not grasp anything in the world. So because now it probably can happen particularly using the sounds. So when you are experiencing sounds from different sides, different directions, you try to keep an open mind rather than you... keep a very focused, narrow type of a mind. You keep a fairly open mind. You are ready to listen to any sound coming from any direction. Whatever those sounds come and go, come and go, come and go. And in between you feel unexistence kind of thing. Nothing is there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very peaceful.
Mm.
I suppose I'm trying to repeat that experience. I'm trying to make it happen again, but of course I can't.
No, anyway, rather than doing the same method, you can try other methods as well. Now, say if you are practicing Vedana Anupassana, you see how feelings are coming and going, appearing and disappearing. The when that produce or that gives you the kind of a wisdom, it also takes you to the same experience. Suppose you are looking at your mind, certain thoughts are coming and going. And all of a sudden say no thoughts. Probably it will trigger the same experience.
And that experience, how did you describe it?
Anisita means no association. The mind does not associate anything. Mind is not dependent on anything. It's very much like a kind of an independent mind. So what we discussed today is the dependent kind of a process. But right now, on such state, so mind has basically very much like independent. Does not depend on anything.
Feels sort of a bit disconnected.
Exactly, yeah.
Alright, thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
So those are the questions from our side, Bhante.
Okay, then. Okay, then we'll wind up. So then we have no questions from our side also. I cordially invite Venerable Dhammo Sadha to conduct the sharing of merits.
Very fortunate we are that we still have this teaching in the world, this teaching that is profound, a teaching that leads to dispassion, a teaching that leads to cessation, and not only that, we are still able to practice that path that leads to dispassion and cessation. Meritorious deed this is, to teach and to listen to this Dhamma, and so we would like to extend these merits to our parents, to the deities. May our relatives share in our merit making. May all deities rejoice at our merit making. May all celestial beings protect the Dhamma exposition and the Buddha Sasana for a long time. And may the seeds of Dhamma that we have received grow, producing path, fruition, and Nibbana. Therefore, I invite you all to join in the recitation of the traditional Pali verses for the sharing of merits.
Etavata chamme sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Etavata chamme sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Etavata chamme sambatam punya sampadam sambe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha cha bhummattha devanaga mahittika punyantam anumoditva chirangrakkantu sasanam. Akasattha cha bhummattha devanaga mahittika punyantam anumoditva chirangrakkantu desanam. Akasattha cha bhummattha devanaga mahittika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu mamparam. Idango nyatinam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idango nyatinam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idango nyatinam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yavanimpana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yavanimpana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yavanimpana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.